last time I didn't get to something very interesting because we were didn't expect that we would spend so much time on that Torah, but we did. So there's an interesting Reb Chaim. I'm not known for quoting Reb Chaims in the Sefer Chinuch Shir, as they normally don't touch on the basic halacha. But there's a very interesting Reb Chaim that deals with the issue of whether there's Neta Ravai outside the land of Israel or not, because he has an interesting piece in the Sefer, Reb Chaim on the Rambam, where he discusses what the nature of the mitzvah of Orla in Chutz Laretz is. He says, is the mitzvah, the prohibition of Orla in Chutz Laretz, an independent prohibition? In other words, the Torah talks about Orla, and it says, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, you have this prohibition of Orla, you can't eat the fruit of the trees for the first 3 years. And then there's a separate halacha l'moshe misinai, which says, oh, and by the way, there's also a prohibition of Orla and Chutz Laretz, but we have all these conditions that if there's any doubt as to whether it's Orla or not, then it's not a problem. Or, yeah.
Wait a second, why would there be a halacha l'moshe misinai dealing with Jews living outside of Eretz Yisrael when we're not supposed to live outside of Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah, because people do. They've been gullus. Right, sometimes they don't have control over the situation.
All right.
Sometimes, yeah. And the other, Reb Chaim says that the other tzad to this chakira, this investigation as to what the nature of the halacha is in typical Brisker style, is maybe the halacha l'moshe misinai that forbids Orla and Chutz Laretz is tacked on to the original prohibition of Orla, meaning the halacha l'moshe misinai comes to say that the Torah talks about Orla in Eretz Yisrael, and that prohibition also applies outside the land of Israel, but you have all these rules of the suffix that there's any doubt as to whether it's Orla, then it's permitted. So is the prohibition of Orla outside the land of Israel, is that an independent prohibition, or is it a corollary to the prohibition of Orla, a parcel of the prohibition of Orla in Eretz Israel, just in a different facet of it? So he says that this comes to explain, he's medayek this in different shita, so he thinks that this investigation of his could come to explain the machlokes as to whether there's neta revai in Chutz Laretz or not, whether the fruits of the fourth year are holy and you need to redeem them outside the land of Israel or not. He says, if it's an independent prohibition, then you can understand why there's no neta revai in Chutz Laretz. He says, medayek, this is the sheet of the Rambam. The Rambam says that Orla and Chutz Laretz is, in his reading of it, that is a completely separate prohibition. So therefore, according to the Rambam, there's no neta revai in Chutz Laretz because Halacha l'moshe misinai is an independent thing. And Halacha l'moshe misinai simply said, there is Orla and Chutz Laretz in its limited fashion. And Halacha l'moshe misinai never said there's neta revai. So therefore, there's no neta revai at all in Chutz Laretz. Whereas the sheet of the Geonim that the Rambam quotes, according to Reb Chaim, the way he analyzes it, is that they hold that the prohibition of Orla outside the land of Israel is an extension of the prohibition of Orla inside the land of Israel. So therefore, since it's just an extension, so in Mela, you extend the prohibition of Neta Ravai, at least insofar as Kerem Ravai is concerned, to the prohibition outside the land of Israel. And it's a very interesting way to analyze whether the mitzvah of Neta Ravai is applicable outside the land of Israel or not, based on whether Orla is independent prohibition outside the land of Israel, it's an extension of the prohibition in Eretz Israel. They look in the back, so in the most editions of Reb Chaim, it has a copy down the Chazon Ish's marginal notes on his copy of Reb Chaim, and as well known, the Chazon Ish did not particularly like Reb Chaim's style of learning, this conceptual analysis. And so he thinks this is not correct. He thinks that this doesn't necessarily have to do one with the other. But in any event, I thought that the Reb Chaim's analysis was very interesting in this situation. So there's a famous story that when the Sefer of the Chidushim of Reb Chaim Brisker on the Rambam came out, so it's called Chidushei Rabbeinu Chaim Halevi al HaRambam. So the Chazon Ish didn't like this. He took one look at the Sefer. He says, Rabbeinu is a title for Rishonim. You don't call it contemporary authority. You say, give us something else, but Rabbeinu Chaim Alevi, that sounds like the title of a Rishon. So they shot back at him, well, Chazon is a title for Nevi'im. So, anyway, so there was this content with each other's styles of learning. In any event, the Chazon Ish is normally, like we said, normally more practical, not so conceptual, just trying to get to the actual practical halacha, whereas Reb Chaim is as well known as not too concerned with how we paskin and the practical halacha, is more into analysis, and that's where they get this whole idea that they have all these chumras, that they have to be choshesh for all these shitas, because they The standard method of learning is you work through all the shittas, you try to figure out which one makes more sense and is the better reading of the sources and it corresponds to practice and history and whatever. But the brisker shita is, no, that every shita in the Rishonim makes sense. We have to analyze where they're coming from. Is it a din? One holds it's a din in this, one holds a din in that. You know, it's we can analyze and understand the shittas of all the Rishonim, so therefore, since they all make sense, so we got to do all of them as much as possible. Which is obviously not the traditional approach of the Jewish people, but there is this brisker group that is somewhat of a presence at YU due to Rav Soloveitchik, this idea, but that's mostly just in the small brisker group. They have this idea that they try to be choshish for everything as much as possible. Of course, they have their kulas too. That's why, you know, the certain things. So Reb Chaim wasn't choshish for whatever reason. The brisker Rav wasn't choshish for whatever reason. So even if it does make sense, another postgame hold, you should be choshish for it. So the brisker people aren't choshish for it because that's, they didn't, so the Reb Chaim and the brisker Rav didn't have this chumrah. They decided not to be choshish for this for whatever reason. So that's why someone I know told me once a line I very much like, which is that brisk is a chasidus. That they have, just like each different Hasidic sects have their practices that they do just because the Rebbe did it. So it's not that they, you know, really intellectually analyzing what they should do and what makes the most sense to do in halacha, or they're not choshish for literally everything. They're choshish for whatever the Rebbe was choshish for. So it's not, it's probably not what Reb Chaim and the Brisker Rav really had in mind for everyone to copy them like that, but we know that with the tendency nowadays in Judaism towards following the Rebbe, making everything into a chassidus, litvish chassidus, so they came up with this. A lot of people tried to copy this approach also, if they learned in the yeshiva, whatever it is. Okay. Mitzvah Reish Mem Ches, 248. Shelo lechol velishtos kederech zolel v'sovei. Not to eat and drink in the manner of a glutton and a drunkard. So we already saw this, right? The mitzvah says, kedoshim tiyu, that is a famous machlokes between Rashi and the Ramban as to what the mitzvah of kedoshim tiyu is. Mitzvah of kedoshim, according to Rashi, it means to the mitzvah of kedoshim tiyu, you should be holy, specifically relating to the arayos, that we should be very careful not to get involved in the arayos at all. And according to the Ramban, it's, I mean, neither counts it in the official cheshbon of the mitzvahs, but according to the Ramban, it just means he's supposed to act in a manner that's in consonance with Torah principles, even if it doesn't violate any technical halacha. It's like, I remember when I was growing up, some rabbi said in a drasha in Parshas Kedoshim, if you eat, you know, a whole pizza, even if it's Yoshan, Pas Yisrael, Chol of Yisrael, Hamish Hechsher on the tomato sauce, all these things, so if you eat an entire pizza, that's a violation of Kedoshim to you. So what does this mean? There's a specific mitzvah not to eat and drink. Is this what the mitzvah is talking about? No, there's not a specific mitzvah in the minyan mitzvahs. It's a Torah principle that brought out from the pasuk of kedoshim to you. So what is this talking about? Shalola harbos bachilo shtiya bimehanairus. This specifically relates to the eating and drinking in the days of youth. Or the days of youth, usually right after bar mitzvah. It's the same principle as we have by a girl. We'll see in a few minutes. This was really talking about male children. See that in a few minutes. But by a girl, there's a status called a naira, na'ara, that before she turns 12, so she's a ketana, that she's totally under her father's authority. When she's 12 and a half, she becomes a bogeres, she's an adult woman, I'll be in halacha, and she's completely in her own, her father has no authority over her whatsoever anymore. And when she's between the ages of 12 and 12 and a half, so then she's in an intermediate status called a naira, which is relevant for certain dinim of the Torah, naira, melra, sa, etc. But here we have this specifically relating to a male child, and he also has yemeha nairus, which is the first kufa, first period of time after he turns 13. Again, the beginning of when they're, again, a girl who's 12 years old in one day, what we would call in English 12 years old, then she has to observe all the mitzvahs. Just because she's called a naira, not a bogeres yet, she's still completely a bas mitzvah, so to speak. It has nothing to do with that, just to do with technical things like naira amoros, or kiddushin, etc. So here, they're specifically talking about the beginning of the bar mitzvah period, the first few months. B'tanayim ha'nizkarim b'ven soreru more bakasub. That this verse is talking about a ben soreru more. We thought ben soreru more was just in Parshas Kisetze. But we'll see in a few minutes why we have to say this, that this pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim is talking specifically about the Ben Sora Mor, at least in the technical specific sense of the verse, even if we can learn other things out of it as well. It's a whole discussion in Masechas Sanhedrin. There's a parak of Masechas Sanhedrin called Ben Sora Mor, appropriately. You should not eat upon the blood. So what does it mean, you shall not eat upon the blood? It's an ambiguous verse. Why it can mean a few different things. Shekein Amru, I mean the mitzvah of dam specifically, the prohibition of eating blood is found a few times in the Torah. So we don't need this one also. So what does it mean, to lo sochlu al hadam, upon the blood? Shekein Amru b'peirush b'sanhedrin. Azhara leven sorer umore minayin. So we have this whole section in Parshas Kisetze at the beginning that talks about a wayward and rebellious child, a ben sorer umore. So it says that you gotta stone him. So, but we have this principle that you never find in the Torah a punishment unless you find a specific prohibition. So the Torah never just says someone who violates Shabbos shall be put to death without saying thou shalt not violate Shabbos. There has to be two things. There has to be a place where it says it's Asur, and then it has the punishment for it. It can't just say the punishment. So, well, in Parshas Kisetze, it just says the punishment for Ben Sora Mor, but never says, thou shalt not be a Ben Sora Mor. Tamalomar lo sochla hadam. So, according to this Gemara, the pasuk of lo sochla hadam, you shall not eat upon the blood, is referring to the type of eating which could turn one into a Ben Sora Mor. Kalomar lo sochla achila shehimavia lishboch dam. You shouldn't eat the type of eating which can cause blood to be spilt, which is the type of eating that the Ben Sora Mor engages in. So that's the type of being a glutton and drunkard that could cause one to be put to death. In other words, if you just do what I just said and you down a whole pizza, that obviously not put to death for that. That's not a good idea. It violates serious Torah principles.
Could it be meat, though?
yes, for the Ben Sora Mor, it has to be meat. But I'm just saying you could. No. I'm just saying, for if you just read the title of this mitzvah, Shelo Lechol Lishtos Kedarch Zol V'Sovi, you don't know exactly what it's talking about. V'chosav Rambam Zichrono Livracha V'afal Pisha Zal Lav Hulav Shebeklalo. So the Rambam has a difficult problem, which, yeah.
I seem to recall that one of the difficulties of Ben Sora Mor is that actually it's referring to somebody who does this before he's bar mitzvah. Or like,
no, it's the first couple months after
first
his bar mitzvah.
Couple months after it. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not, yeah. It's a very short period of time. Because as we'll see, the Chachamim, the way they darshan and explain this mitzvah of Ben Sora Mor, it basically precludes it from ever happening. So, yeah, we'll see the halachos later. So the Rambam notes that we have a problem because we have a concept called lav shebeklolos. It means that when there's one pasuk that refers to a few different things, that a few different prohibitions are included in one verse, then you can never have a punishment regarding those things. It's that you're not allowed to do it, but you don't get punished for that. So we have a problem because lo sochlu hadam, the Chazal darshan many prohibitions from this verse of lo sochlu hadam. So how could it be that this is the prohibition for the ben sora mor? He's getting punished for a lav shebeklolos. So the Rambam explains that no, ein onshin a lav shebeklolos means that this is the. It doesn't say certain things. It delineates the punishment explicitly. But most of the negative commandments are just stated as negative commandments, so we know that the punishment is malchus, is lashes. So it just means that when there's something that's a lav shebeklolos, then you don't assume that the punishment is lashes. But if there's a lav shebeklolos, and then the Torah delineates the punishment specifically, then that is you don't apply the principle there if you don't receive a punishment for a lav shebeklolos. Kolomar onesh ben zorer mor. So the Torah says it explicitly. Dainu mishpato shu beskila, so he receives the penalty of stoning. Meforish bakasuv in parshas Kisetze. Eini choshesh al asara im hi min halav shebeklolos. So then, if the punishment is specified, then you don't have to worry as to whether the original prohibition is included in a umbrella pasuk or not. V'nosan tam l'dvarav kimo shekasuv b'sifro mitzvahs lo sa'asei kuf tzarihei uv ikar hachi. So he explained all this in his Sefer HaMitzvahs. So who always disagree with the Sefer HaMitzvahs? The Ramban. The Ramban wrote Hasogis. He wrote a lot of criticisms of the Rambam and Sefer Mitzvahs, and he has a whole different system for calculating the 613 mitzvahs. So Ramban Zichron Alvracha, Tafas Alav Harbe Bechan. He says, he really went at him with this. He says, I don't like this. The Ulam Shnei Amodim Ki Zeh Alav, the Lo Soch La Adam, the Chol Keyotzi Bo, Shekol Dvarim Rabim, Kemo Shenichtov Kan, Veinin Yonam Vetam Yisuran Shaveh. They said, no, the mitzvah of Lav, the mitzvah of Lo Soch La Adam does include a number of things, says the Ramban. El Shakosu Basarim Kulam Belav Echad Veshem Echad. So it is a shtick alav shebichlalus. So how does the Ramban deal with that? So before we get to that, he interludes again with the Rambam. Aval Rambam zichron levracha yomar ki mipneken yeonesh haben misa b'achilazo avapi shazhara mizeh alav avishagazu gilo v'perushon shebiskilo v'mokom acher. So he rehashes the Rambam that since the Torah specified that he was received the penalty of skila at a different place in the Torah, so anything that the Torah says is subject to the penalty of death at the hands of the Bezdin or Koris is automatically a negative commandment. So if you except for the two things, the two famous exceptions, that's a mitzvah saseh and nevertheless you're chayev Koris for it, which is failure to observe the paschal sacrifice and failure to become circumcised. So the fact that the punishment is specifically delineated serves to counterbalance the fact that the original prohibition is a lav shebeklos, and ordinarily you wouldn't receive a penalty for it. Since it says specifically that the person should be put to death. The Ramban does not agree with this whole analysis of the Rambam that the mention of the punishment specifically serves to mitigate the lav shebeklalos issue. Ulolam yechazer lios ha'asar meforeshes al haloke o al hamumas velo milav shebeklalos. The Ramban says, no, you always have to have a specific delineation of the prohibition. It can never be a lav shebeklalos. Ta'afilu yefarish ha'gosu misasu mea pa'amim adayin yom rab lo'ana shalim ken hizir. So the Ramban says, even if it said 100 times in the Torah that this person is put to death, it doesn't matter that you still need it at least to say in one place that the thing is forbidden. So it's still, lav shebeklos never works to receive a punishment, therefore. How does the Ramban interpret this? So we have we didn't see this yet, but we have the Ben Sora Mora has to do this gluttonous eating and drinking twice. He has to do it once. He does it once, and then the parents bring him to the Bezdin, and he receives the penalty of Malkos, of lashes. And if he does it again, it's only then that he receives the penalty of Skila. So how do you know that? Vamar B'Sanhedrin, Malkos Ben Sora Mora Hechaksiva. Where does it say that you get the penalty of Malkus? Kid Rebbe Avahu for his first eating. Rebbe Avahu says, "Dam Rebbe Avahu lamanu Malkus motzi shemra dichsive v'yisru oso mi v'yisru dichsiv b'ven sorer b'ven mi ben v'haya im bin hakos harasha." So it's a little bit removed. But the way they learn it out is that the motzi shemra, that somebody who says that his new bride was not in virgin, so he receives the penalty of Malkos, which doesn't say explicitly in the Torah, because it says v'yisro, so they shall penalize him. So it's talking there about monetary penalization, but it says also mi v'yisro dichsiv ben sarum. All right, so that's learned out from not only is there a monetary penalty, but you also rebuke him, v'yisro, so that you penalize him in a different way, and that's the same way as the Ben Sora Mora, because it says, v'yisro so v'lo yishma aleihem, that his parents chastise him, penalize him, and they don't, and that's why it says by Ben Sora Mora. So what does it mean, v'yisro so Ben Sora Mora, u'ben mi ben v'yem bin hakos harasha? that when it talks, the Torah talks about the idea of Malchus, it says, and it shall be that if the person is the, literally, the son of hitting, bin hakos, but ben in Hebrew doesn't always mean literally a son. You know, ben esrim shana means somebody who's 20 years old, doesn't literally mean the son of 20 years. So here, it doesn't mean the son of hitting, it means somebody to whom the hitting is applicable. Just like ben esrim shana means someone to whom 20 years is applicable. So since it uses the word ben, though, so you apply that to the ben sorer amore. Okay, and then since it says v'yisru so ben sorer amore, then you learn that so it must be malchus. So it says v'yisru so also by a motzi shemra. So therefore, there must be malchus also by a motzi shemra. That's the traditional interpretation. The od b'zeh. So, v'od b'zeh kushya l'Rambam zichrono l'vracha. The Rambam says, "Mash amar be'ikar hasheni she'ein malkin mikoach gezera shava." So this sounds like there is that this whole idea that the ben sorer amora receives malkos is learned from gezera shava. Gezera shava is a method of biblical interpretation that involves since the same word is used in two different places, so you apply the halachos of one place to another place. So since it says the word bin, which is the same as ben by malkos, so it uses the same word ben by ben sorer amora, then you apply the penalty of malkos to a ben sorer amora. But the Rambam says that in order to receive the penalty of malkos, you need an explicit verse, or relatively explicit verse. You can't use a gzeira shava in order to derive that the penalty of malkos is applicable over here. Though hikshal harav me'amru ki aben yisorer yischayav misa riboy ha'achila velo chalaklal ha'miso ben achila rishona lishnia. So we also have a question on the Rambam's approach, which is that according to the Rambam, that the pasuk of lo suchlo ahadam basically is just generally addressing the ben sorer amora, then there's a problem because the ben sorer amora requires two eatings. The first eating has to be a gluttonous eating, which he's punished by malchus, and then another gluttonous eating that he's punished by stoning. So he didn't. There's no difference between the two. He lumped them all together. Uvepirush amru ba gemara sanhebis sanhedrin shachila rishona shaben sormora ein osin misa la malchus, that the first eating gets malchus. Says in the gemara kemosha amru masrin bo bifnei shnayinu malkin oso bifnei shlosha, that you have to have a hasra before two witnesses. It's a quite machlokas rishonim as to whether it has all the dinim of hasra regularly, or just means that it has to be right before he does the eating, or it just means that his parents suspect that he's about to do the eating, so they have a sort of extrajudicial hasra that doesn't, you don't have to adhere to all the rules. But whatever it is, so you need to warn the son before two witnesses, and then you lash him with a bezdin shel shlosha. Meaning, because you don't need a bezdin of 23, because a bezdin of 23 is only required to put people to death, not to administer malchus. So chazor v'niskalkel nidon bezdin v'shlosha. So then if he has, again, he does the gluttonous eating again, then he has to be tried in court of 23. V'od kosev v'zichron al-bracha v'zeh l'shono haroi l'halos mizeh she'achila rishona nimnas v'neshes malchus v'shniya on shamisa v'en shtei menios v'cheshvan ha-mitzos v'nichlu b'lo sochlu ha-hadam ha-kan. So what is the Ramban have this whole, what's his conclusion of how he's going to interpret this so that he doesn't run into all the problems that he had? With the Rambam's approach, he said that the lo sochlu ahadam, for whatever reason, the only cheshbin that it has in the minyan ha-mitzvahs is that it's counted twice, one for the first eating of the ben sorer amora, one for the second ben sorer amora, so therefore you have the asharis, the warnings that the ben sorer amora should not do what he could be punished for, and you have the two specific mentions in minyan ha-mitzvahs, and then you have the punishment in parashas kiseitse, and you don't have the problem of lav shebeklolos, because it's not lav shebeklolos, that this pasuk really is that you include two twice in the minyan ha-mitzvahs, one the first eating, one the second eating, and then the punishments are delineated in parashas kiseitse. And it's not exactly glatt. Shall we say, but that's how the Ramban feels, that he has to interpret it in order to not to run into the problems that the Rambam, he feels affect the Rambam's approach. So again, the Ramban would count this as two mitzvahs. Mm-hmm. one, the Ben Sarmor shouldn't do a first eating, and second, the Ben Sarmor shouldn't do a second eating. And he says, you know, why doesn't the Rambam count it as two mitzvahs also? Because the Rambam counts the prohibition of chametz and seor as two mitzvahs in the minyan of mitzvahs. That the sourdough and chametz are two mitzvahs in the minyan of mitzvahs, so why doesn't he count this as two mitzvahs also? Some of the other nosei kelim, the commentators on the Rambam Sefer Mitzvahs, says no, since those are two separate objects, then he can count them as two mitzvahs. But here, the type of eating is exactly the same. It's just the first time, it has different rules. The first time and the second time is all part of the din of Ben Saramore, so he doesn't count it as two separate mitzvahs. So again, go like the Rambam, you go like the Ramban. It has no effect on the practical halacha, just how you count the mitzvahs and how strictly you adhere to the idea that you cannot receive a penalty for something, anything that's a lavsha beklolos, like an umbrella type of mitzvah. Okay, now that we've discovered that this is, in fact, a lavsha beklolos, that even though the ikar meaning, according to the Gemara, is that it's talking about a ben sora more, but, so what are the other things that could potentially be included in this lav? So what are the things that Chazal tell us are also included in this prohibition of losoch la'adam, you shall not eat upon the blood? Avar zichrono livracha, sheyesh ba'azhara la'ochel mibehema kodem sheteitze nafsha. So we have a prohibition that you're not allowed to eat any part of the animal before it dies. It's not Avar min achai. So we have, this is one of the examples of things that sometimes the rules by non-Jews are more stringent than the rules by Jews, because with Jews we have these dakestika rules, you know, slight nuance that we have shiurim, that you have to eat a kezias in order to be punished, and you're not punished until you're 12 or 13 years old, and you are not, for fetuses, something that's Omed al Haperik, a topic of current discussion, which is that while a Jew is not put to death for killing a fetus, a non-Jew, it just says you're not allowed to kill anything for a non-Jew. We don't have all these specific rules. The non-Jews are not allowed to kill a fetus in any way. Not that Jews are allowed to kill fetuses, I'm not saying that. We're not going to get the whole discussion on abortion and the exact parameters right now. But for non-Jews, the taka of the din is they're not allowed to perform abortions at any way, shape, or form, which is something that's interesting to note. I mean, maybe Pekuach Nefesh or something, but it's not, generally not, the rules are even more stringent for that. So here is one example where the rules are more stringent for non-Jews as well, which is that non-Jews, it just says they're not allowed to eat Eiver min achai. They're not allowed to eat any Eiver from a live animal. So, obviously, it tells us that it's alive. But by a Jew, we have a concept of shchita. That once it's dead, once you shecht it, so insofar as eating is concerned, so the animal is dead. Right? So you take, you cut a slice off the animal after the shchita, so it's kosher. But we have this special prohibition that you're not still, even though it's kosher, you have to wait till the animal dies in order to eat any part of its body.
That's a chef that is dead. You don't have to, I mean,
no, I mean, it takes a few minutes. I mean, not new minutes. It could take a few, it could take
no,
a little.
Okay, no, in other words, until the animal stops kicking or whatever it might be. You know?
Right.
Yeah, oh, really?
But I'm
okay,
saying
okay.
If you cut off a steak, couldn't get a steak, obviously, carve a steak, but killing it probably. But I'm saying if you cut off a piece of the animal and while it's still thrashing about, then for Jews, that's kosher, but you have to wait till the animal's dead to eat that piece. For a non-Jew, that's still considered Eiver min achai, because till it's dead, they don't have a concept of shechita, non-Jews. So shechita means nothing to them. So they, even if the piece was cut off before the animal dies completely, even if they wait till after the animal actually is completely dead, then they're still not allowed to eat it.
I think, though, by definition, that once you shecht an animal, it's immediately considered to be dead. Why should
it's
it
not?
Be?
Why? It's not dead yet.
I mean, in other words,
it had a shechita. It had a heter shechita. Now you're allowed to eat the animal. But he would have this other prohibition from Los Sochel Adam that you're not allowed to eat any part that was cut off the animal before the animal actually dies. Mm-hmm. If it didn't have shchita yet, then yes, that's Eiver min achai for Jews also.
Yeah, right.
Correct. Fine. V'chein la'ochel b'sar kodshim kodem zrikas hadam. that you're not allowed to eat from sacrificial meats before the blood was thrown on the altar. That the dam is still around. The blood of the sacrifice is still sitting around in the mizrak, the vessel that holds the blood before it's sprinkled on the altar. So if it's still in the mizrak, so you're not allowed to eat. If the blood is still around, you're not allowed to eat the meat upon the blood. You're not allowed to, for the Korban Pesach, you're not allowed to shecht on chametz. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that you're not allowed to have the animal stand on a slice of challah while you're shechting it. It means you're not allowed to shecht the Korban Pesach while you still have chametz around. So this means the same thing. You're not allowed to eat the sacrificial meats, but while the blood is still around, before it's been poured on the altar. So we have a concept in Hilchos Avelos called the Sudas Havra, that the first meal, while after a person becomes an Avel, meaning after the deceased is buried, and the first thing is an Avel as opposed to an Onain, so after the burial, so the Avel is not allowed to eat food that belongs to him or her. The Avel is required to eat food that's provided to him or her by others.
V'chein Sanhedrin.
So you don't receive a Sudas Havra for somebody who was killed by the court. So the people who are mourning for this person, in different situations, we have different rules of mourning, but in any case, you do not receive a Sudas Havra. You do not have to, you do not eat someone else's food if your relative that you was now deceased was killed because of an infraction that required Mises Bezdin. V'chein Sanhedrin Shargu Es HaNefesh Ein Tom In Klum Kol Osel Hayom. So the day that the Sanhedrin declares that someone is to be put to death, they require to fast. Losoch la'adam, you should not eat upon the blood. You should not eat, literally, on a day where you're going to be spilling blood. And this one is the most relevant of all the things we've discussed so far. V'shelo yitom adam klum ad sheyispalel. That one is not allowed to eat anything before davening in the morning, which the Gemara in Brachos and Sanhedrin, which one? The different, I think it's in Brachos. It says that one of the things of Losoch La'adam is that you're not allowed to eat before you daven for your souls, for your blood. In other words, that's the connection. You're not allowed to eat while your blood is still outstanding. Its fate is still not been daven for yet. So you're not allowed to eat anything before davening Shachris in the morning. There are different rules. It's more serious because you wake up in the morning, so the first thing you're supposed to do is davening for the day, but you're not allowed to have a meal before davening Mincha and Ma'ariv, at least before a certain time comes in the afternoon, and then before Anseis Kochavim comes at night, you're not allowed to eat a meal. You're allowed to taste a little bit of, have a little snack. But in the morning, before davening Shacharis, you're not allowed to eat anything before one has davened Shacharis. There's also another pasuk that's brought in the Gemara and Brachas, is Osi Hishlachta Acharei Gevecha. You've thrown me behind your back. So it says, don't read Gevecha, your back, but rather read Geecha, your pride. You've thrown me behind your pride, meaning that you had to take care of your own needs before you daven to me. So that's also another reason from these two psukim, we have this prohibition that one's not allowed to eat anything before davening in the morning. It's interesting because the two psukim can be used for different things, because from the way it's presented here, first of all, it sounds like it's a mitzvah daraisa. It's a prohibition daraisa. You're not allowed to eat anything before davening in the morning. The Minchas Chinuch talks about it a little bit, and he points out that, of course, that's not the general assumption, that the assumption of all the poskim, that this is just an asmachta. It's a peg for a rabbinical prohibition, not that this is really what the pasuk means, that service of the rice. So another machlokes Rambam and Ramban, as to whether there's a requirement every day to daven at all. It could be that tefillah, the whole institution, is only the rabbanon. So of course then it doesn't make sense to say you're not allowed to eat in the morning before you've daven. Although even according to the Rambam, so the you don't have to say Shmon Esrei midaraisa, that's the rabbanon. You have to daven something. So obviously the prohibition would not be until you daven Shmon Esrei. Was according to in the Rabbanan, the prohibition would be until you daven Shmon Esrei. So if it's an Isser Daraisa, which is what it sounds like over here in some sources in the Rambam also, then should be very nervous. Maybe you think you wouldn't even allow to drink water. You're not allowed to drink anything before or eat or drink anything at all before davening. So the poskim say this is the accepted opinion. It's not mentioned explicitly in many of the early sources, but it's brought in the tour from the Ravio and the Rush that. Since the one of the psukim that discusses, first of all, we assume it's the Rabbanan, so we don't have to be stringent. Second of all, since the other pasuk besides Losochul Adam that is regarding the prohibition of eating before davening is Osi Yishlachtach Rei Gevecha, Al Tikri Gevecha Ala Geecha, that you're not allowed to daven before you're taking care of your own needs, your own pride before you daven to God. But that's not right. So they say, well, like water. That is not pride. We're talking about when you say pride means, oh, I'm hungry. Like, I want some cake. I want something delicious. I want, you know, but if you're just parched in the morning and you need to take some water before davening, so that's not pride. That's not pride at all. So therefore, you're allowed to drink water before davening. And this, in fact, that's the accepted halacha brought in Shulchan Aruch, brought in all the normative poskim, is that one is, in fact, allowed to drink water in the morning before davening. Some of the later poskim, Mishnah Berurah has a discussion based on earlier Achronim that maybe this should be extended also to things like coffee and tea, which are not, you know, to satisfy one, but just to give one a little bit of energy for davening. It's not, you know, geecha. It's not that you're satisfying your needs before davening. It's just, you know, parching, quenching your thirst a little bit and getting yourself more prepared to davening. Certainly things that are only eaten for medical necessity, that if you have to take a pill immediately getting up in the morning, you have to eat something. You're not really hungry at all. You just, you wish you didn't have to eat this. You'd rather not. That's also would not be geecha. That's not your own needs. That's something you have to do for medical purposes. Now that is a din. You're not allowed to eat in the morning before davening. It's a question also how it applies to women. That women who are not always makbid to daven Shmon Esrei, although nowadays it's pretty popular that women at least daven Shachar Samincha. Some old women have to technically really should be davening Ma'ariv also. But a woman who's makbid to daven shachar simincha every day, that has to be makbid on this also, that she can't eat before she davens Shmon Esrei in the morning. It says if you're completely, you know, famished and you can't focus on your prayers and you're so lightheaded and you can't do anything, so then you would be allowed to eat. So that's, and most people I think can manage going till the end of davening without eating, but under ordinary circumstances. But women who, for whatever reason, don't daven at all, so they say that, you know, you certainly, a woman is absolutely certainly required to make Birchos HaShachar in the morning. You know, Modani is not a requirement, but maybe that also is a shtickel davening. So therefore, some says she should certainly at least wait till she does whatever prayer she's going to say in the morning. There's a odd misconception that we were discussing, you know, the topic of the shiurim between Mincha Ma'ariv and Shabbos afternoon has been the laws of Kiddush Shabbos morning. What issues you could get involved with there. So this came up, you know, Derech Agav, because there's an issue on Shabbos morning. So you're according to this machlokes as to whether you're allowed to eat before Kiddush Shabbos morning also. Kiddush Friday night, you're for sure not allowed to eat and drink before. But Kiddush Shabbos morning, according to a lot of Rishonim, you are allowed to eat and drink before, because it's just the Birkas Hananin of Bari Priya Gofen before the Suda, so it's not a real Kiddush, so therefore there's no prohibition of eating before. So that's what many Rishonim say that, but the normative approach is we do try to satisfy the opinion of the Rambam and other Rishonim that there's a prohibition of eating before Kiddush Shabbos morning as well. So the Tur in Simon Peites brings a machlokes between the Ravia and his father, the Rosh. That the Ravia accepted the idea that you're not allowed to eat before Kiddush Shabbos morning at all. So he would not drink water Shabbos morning before davening, because it was before Kiddush. Not only, it wasn't just before davening where he would allow drinking water, but it was before Kiddush also where the rules are more stringent.
Wait, where did you get water? You couldn't basically have any time. You have water Friday before, you know, night before you can't.
The Rambam maybe holds you could drink water Friday night before, but that's not that's the Das Yochid. We hold that you're not allowed to eat or drink anything whatsoever.
So you can't have water then before Abdallah?
Water you're allowed before Abdallah.
Okay, what's the difference before Abdallah and before Kiddush?
Because more Kiddush is more Chumar. Now, but Friday night, once Shabbos starts, you're not allowed to eat or drink anything whatsoever before. It's a shaila as to whether, you know, just accepting Shabbos It kicks in already. So Poskim say, like, if a woman lights candles and then realizes she's extremely thirsty, and Shabbos hasn't even really begun yet, so we can maybe rely on the sheet of the Rambam and that you'd be allowed to drink water before Kiddush Friday night. But in normal circumstances, certainly once Shabbos has actually begun al pi halacha, then not just personal acceptance. So although in general circumstances, once you accept Shabbos, that's it. But certainly once Shabbos has really begun al pi halacha, then you're not allowed to eat or drink anything, including water, until you make Kiddush. Again, unless there's serious medical necessity. So the question is, so Shabbos morning, so the Ravia would not drink water before davening, Shacharis, even though on a weekday he would allow it, because he was before Kiddush, not because it was before davening. But the Rosh said, no, you're allowed to drink water before davening Shabbos morning, because the Kiddush Shabbos day is connected to the meal. So you're not allowed to eat a meal yet. There's no requirement, so it's not shayach before Kiddush until you've davened. At least Shacharis, maybe Musaf too. I'm not focused about that. But, so for that reason, so our Mekel on drinking water Shabbos morning, even before davening, even though it's before Kiddush also. That is the accepted, that's the accepted halacha, though, as we said here, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, that maybe it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, you could argue that maybe you shouldn't even be drinking water, but the accepted halacha is not in accordance with that, and we do, in fact, we are making on water and even perhaps coffee and tea before davening Shacharis. V'chein azhara leven sora remore kemosha gamarnu. And included in this, of course, is the prohibition of ben sora remore doing the things that could lead him to receive the punishment for ben sora remore, just as we said. Mishor she'a mitzvah. What's the basis for this mitzvah? Well, if Yisharov chatos b'nei Adam, yasu b'sibas riboy hachila v'ashtia, that eating and drinking too much can cause many sins. K'mo shekasu v'yishman yishurun v'yivat, that yishurun got fat and kicked, meaning that they had so much to eat that they didn't have time to think about God, and they rebelled against God. V'chein shamanta avisa kasisa, you got fat and thick. Vayitosha loa usahu, that they and you also and then you abandon the God that made you. V'chein amru zechrona levracha mi garam lach shetivativi karshinin sheachaltich, that what caused you to rebel against me? But the vetch, which is a type of legume that I fed you. V'derekla amru mile kresa zani bisha, that filling the belly is a bad type of thing to do. Kilomar achar milui, that's just a statement of Chazal Maseches Brachos. Kilomar achar milui hakeres yavo ben adam lasos chatoim raim, that when people are too full, that they're gonna be focused on their own needs and not gonna be focused on God. V'inyan hu lefisha mezonos hem isas hachomer, that food is what feeds the material being of a person. And meditating about philosophical topics and fear of God and His precious mitzvos is what feeds the soul. And the soul and the material part of the human being are opposites, as I said before. That Pete, once you feed too much the material stuff, so it's going to the spiritual is going to its power is gonna decline, because you it's sort of like they only have so much space to occupy. So if the material stuff gets bigger, it's gonna push out the spiritual. That there were certain sages who took care of this, and they literally only ate the minimum of exactly what they needed to survive and be healthy, but not indulged at all. That's a little extreme. Most of us can't handle that. It does, but we should try to minimize things that we eat and drink purely for indulgence, as opposed to trying to keep ourselves healthy. Moshe Kosu Tzadik Ochel Asova Nafsho. That it says that in Mishlei that a righteous person eats to satiate his soul. Mm-hmm. And not just his body. That the Torah says that we shouldn't eat and drink too much. That if eating too much can cause, even if your body is bigger, if your soul will be less healthy, will be sickly. The Yova Yabedos Oligamri, we can tell end up completely destroying it. So this is so bad, getting into the habit of eating and drinking too much is really so terrible for your soul that the Torah saw fit to impose the ultimate penalty of death. Again, most times that you eat gluttonously, it does not subject to the death penalty, but it's still just, even though it's not technically subject to the death penalty, one should take to heart the message from this, which is how important it is not to indulge too much in eating and drinking. And this specifically, the death penalty only applies at when person is in the hot part of his life, meaning, you know, really energetic and really the beginning of when he's really chayav to watch himself when he becomes a gadol, as opposed to when he's in his parents' rishus. Gadol, I mean, not a great man in Torah, just not a minor anymore. Halachic gadol at the age of 13. So it's the first 3 months. We know that a person is not considered to be a bar mitzvah on a, you know, a full deraisa level, even if we basically treat him for most things as a bar mitzvah. We assume that he's reached physical maturity once he's age 13, but technically, on a deraisa level, he has to be 13 years old and have 2 pubic hairs. So here, it says, so for the ben sora remora, so until he has 2 pubic hairs, until he has like a set of pubic hair that goes from one side, that surrounds the entire member, then that's the time when he can be considered to become a ben sorer umore. That's considered to be 3 months. It's a shaila as to whether if he gets the ark before the 3 months or whether the 3 months in absolute shear, it's an issue. Umeosa hazman yikach musar lechol yama. That's a time where he really needs to get the good attitudes entrenched in himself. Kimios davar hamazon binyan tmidi ba'adam. People eat all the time. He needs to get the idea of proper eating habits down right at the beginning. You can't eat, obviously, can't go without eating. This issue of Ben Zoramor is only at this particular time. That you have to pay particular attention at the beginning of one's adult halachic adulthood to make sure that these habits last for one's entire life.